Dolan Sermon.
Every once in a while, something comes along in sports, Karen, and I have this feeling. I imagine you have it as well. You see a team that's doing well. You see a player that has more goals than you thought, or a guy who suddenly a stat comes across and you go, man, I better brush up on that team, or I better brush up on that player, because I think I'm in the know, but if I don't know about that, maybe I got to do a little more research here. That happens all the time in our business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You'll see a team on a, I don't know, on a run. You could go even the Colorado Avalanche. You're like, wait, I haven't seen them play this season. I got to see Heiskanen. Like, what is it, you know, what does he do? No, Heiskanen's in Dallas. I'm thinking of Rantanen, sorry. He's been on a heater. I got to go look at what he's doing this season. Stuff like that.
We mentioned the Nashville Predators. They've won 13 of 16 games. I'm guessing a vast majority of our audience has not seen the Predators play this season. You hear a number like that, you say, well, maybe I better pay a little more attention to the Predators. I use that as a segue into some advice you want to give a part of this show. History that needs to be watched. Something that needs to be done. Research for somebody who is
yes.
a staple here day in, day out.
Mr. Greg Ballack, are you there?
I felt like this was coming. I felt like this was the segue we were going towards.
So our listeners, we were just talking about Anthony Edwards and, you know, who comes to mind first for most of us of a certain age group. It's the actor, because we have Top Gun, we have ER. Some people were texting in Revenge of the Nerds character.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit before my time.
Gilbert.
But again, I, you know, yeah, know who he is. And then, Greg, you put in a text tweet to Scott and myself saying you've never seen ER, which, okay, I can maybe understand that, but you've never seen Top Gun?
I have never seen Top Gun, no.
It is one of Tom Cruise's finest acting jobs, if I
I've
do
been
say
meaning
so
to
my,
see it.
Myself? Okay, well, here's the thing. The Jays are playing right now. So you have some free time this afternoon or tonight, right? You don't have to watch the Blue Jays game, 4 o'clock. My homework to you is to go watch Top Gun. You are going to be blown away. Now, when it comes to ER, Scott, you and I disagree a little bit in this. ER has one of the most historic love stories in television history. It goes back to George Clooney and Julianne Margulies. Do you know who they are?
I think so. I think I can handle that.
Okay, you go back to them. One of the most historic love stories, Dr. Doug Ross and Nurse Carol Hathaway. It's just, it'll pull at your heartstrings. You're going to love it. It's just amazing.
Isn't it a soap, though? Isn't it like
yeah basically, that's what it is.
It's a soap opera that was weekly.
I don't think I've watched a soap opera in my entire life, so I don't think I'm going to be lining up for ER.
So technically, it's not a soap opera in the traditional sense.
It's like a Grey's Anatomy kind of thing.
It's a television drama. Okay. Yes,
it's
the
original Grey's Anatomy, okay. Absolutely. But okay, if you're not going to watch ER and, you know, for the love story that is, then go watch Top Gun. Come on.
Well, it came out 5 years before I was born. Like, come on, you guys. You can't fault me for that.
Okay, that's like saying that Karen and I shouldn't watch Rocky because we weren't of an age when we should have been watching hit movies in the mid-70s.
Is it really one of those, like, earth-shattering movies that you need to see, though? Top Gun, really?
Okay, I'll tell you this. I'll let
it's
our
like
listeners
Transformers
win.
Now. Are you going to tell somebody that, oh, you need to see Transformers?
I will
it's
let
change your life.
I will let our listeners weigh in, Greg. If you don't want to listen to myself, if you don't want to listen to Karen, that it should be required viewing for you.
Okay.
I will let our listeners decide. Should Top Gun be required viewing for Greg Bell?
I will also say this, Greg, and I expect to have this the next time we come in. Go Google the soundtrack as well, because it's got some of the most epic soundtrack songs. Kenny Loggins, it's great.
I feel like I know the songs. I feel like I know the songs a bit more. And,
all right.
And I know of the movie. I've just never seen it. I never got around to watching it.
Well, there's a segue out of that. Danger Zone. The Canucks kind of find themselves in one for a couple of different reasons right now. And Google that, and you can play it as the intro music coming back at the bottom of the hour. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We've asked you a couple of things today. What do you care about? What matters for the Canucks down the stretch? What do you want to see? That's one of them. The other thing that made some sort of news yesterday when Elliot Friedman went on the People Show is what he said about general manager Jim Benning. And I want to set this conversation up, because we're going to hear from Chris Johnson this segment as well, Karen. He was on with Halford and Brough today. This has to do with the future of management. It has to do with the future of the coach and the coaching staff here in Vancouver. Elliot Friedman was asked in a roundabout way about the future of Jim Benning. There have been plenty in the media, there have been plenty in the fan base who said, look, they're letting Jim Benning sign Thatcher Demko to a five-year extension. They're getting Jim Benning to get Tanner Pearson under the next three-year deal. He's making these moves at the deadline. That leads me to believe that Jim Benning is going to be the general manager that will be in Vancouver next year, something that has been debated in this fan base. You said it, Karen?
I said it, yeah. I think we were talking about just after the Tanner Pearson deal, and I said he's going to be back, and I don't think you necessarily agreed with me at the time because there are examples in history. Mike Gillis, of course, in the Vancouver market. You could go Peter Chiarelli. I think a day before he was fired, he signed Mikko Koskinen to a long-term deal. But I was one of those ones that felt as soon as you started the taps being opened a little bit and Francesco Aquilini giving Jim Benning the authority to make some of these deals, I was one of the ones that just felt, you know what, he's going to be back.
And maybe most agree. Elliot Friedman certainly does have a listen.
I believe that Benning was coming back for some time now. And I also believe that the contract is guaranteed. I know there have been a lot of rumors out there about options. I don't believe that's the case.
I do not doubt Elliot Friedman's information for a second. I don't doubt his information.
I am just not
there yet. I'm not. Because I have seen this ownership group act in different ways, and this ownership group, I'm not going to say that it blows with the consumer confidence wind. It's not that, but there is a realization of what the fan base wants, where it's at, and when you look at a team that is going to be trying to sell tickets going into that arena, hopefully as soon as October next year, Karen, I'm not convinced. And part of the reason I'm not convinced has to do with the uncertainty around the coaching staff, because something here doesn't make sense to me. Now, it could be as simple as the Aquilini's not wanting to pay what Travis Green is asking for. Could be as simple as that, and that they are now looking at coaches the same way that Tom Dundon has talked about looking as management and coaches, that in the NHL overall, he believes they're overpaid. That doesn't mean he's not going to lock up Rod Brind'Amour, but he has said that on record before. So maybe it's just that. But I want to play this clip from CJ as well, and then we'll get into the conversation. And I know I'm probably in the minority. I know where the money points right now. But here's Chris Johnson this morning on with Halford and Brough talking about Travis Green's future in Vancouver.
I would say that almost every day that passes, it just seems more likely that this is headed towards a breakup. Or, you know, Travis Green's only under contract for what, another couple months here officially to the team. And, you know, it's a little bit unusual for someone, I think, that's had the success he has the last few years, the experience that the team had in the bubble last summer, which I know feels like miles ago, but, you know, clearly there's been growth, you know, since he's been in that position and that they didn't extend him. You know, I think it starts the point eventually where, you know, he's got to look around and consider what's best for him and his family too. And so, you know, I don't think it's been on the front burner with the last couple of weeks and everything that the team, the organization's been dealing with the COVID outbreak. But, you know, if they don't do something quickly, you know, I would think that he's going to have to start looking elsewhere just because he doesn't have a contract. And so, you know, it's a bit of a puzzling one to me. You know, I'm viewing this from afar, of course, but, you know, I think Travis has done a pretty good job with this team and, you know, the young players in particular. And so, you know, it just doesn't seem like it's been a priority to get them locked up. And, you know, that's a little bit of a head scratcher.
And do you think, Scotty, there is a scenario too? I don't know if this has been floated out there from, you know, the insiders or not, but is there a scenario where Travis Green says, okay, we were negotiating a little bit, you wouldn't come up to me, and Jim Benning and the organization says, we'll put it down the road, but it was just either never addressed, or he got to the fact where he's like, you know what, you're not going to pay me what I'm worth. Maybe I am going to go look elsewhere. Maybe this organization doesn't value what I am. I have just given you three Calder Trophy finalists in 3 years, one of them who won it. I've shown that I can develop these young players. I've shown by what you see on the ice, Scott, like, these players play hard for him. They do. I know some people are going to text in and say that's not the case, but when I watch this Vancouver Canucks team, I see them play hard. I look back to that Vegas series. What else could you have asked from that Vancouver team to do against Vegas? They were outmatched. They were out-talented. And you know what? They played as hard as they could and took it to a game seven. If Travis Green says, look at what I did in that bubble, look at what I've done with these young players, I'm sorry, but if you don't overvalue me, I'm done negotiating. I'm just going to take my talents elsewhere because I feel, from what has been said around the rest of the league, that I'm pretty highly regarded.
I have been on this since last summer. I felt, even when they hit the pause button, that Travis Green and this coaching staff had earned an extension. Mm-hmm. Then they did what you just described in the bubble. That added to the case, and it was not done at that time. And we understand the financial uncertainty and other
Absolutely.
Business being affected, all of those different things. I think we all understand that, Karen. But something here doesn't quite add up. And I have heard, you have heard, insiders closest to this team have heard, it's not a road that Jim Benning can go down right now. That there's not a green light to lock up this coaching staff. Now, is that because the number is too high? Is that just because, hey, we're not going to have this conversation again? We'll talk about it later? Or is it something else? Because something doesn't line up here. Management has said repeatedly, we want this coaching staff back. Jim Benning said it the other day. He said it on the People Show on Friday when he joined Randeep and Riccio and Sat. They've repeatedly said that. And yet they've not been able to negotiate a contract extension. Not because it's, hey, here's our number, here's yours. Just we're not talking about it right
yes.
now. Even though there has been public salutations about we want this coaching staff back. This coaching staff's done a really good job. So something doesn't add up. And it's either ownership isn't convinced this is the right coaching staff for the job. And I will say this, though I do believe this coaching staff has earned an extension, I don't look at this as a coaching staff and say, well, it's not irreplaceable. Like, you can never replace. You can't find someone else. No, there's other coaches out there. There's other coaching staffs. Like, you can make this move. But as Dan Murphy pointed out, as you have pointed out, if you're doing that, who's the young up-and-comer that you're going to get on the cheap the way Travis Green on this deal was on the cheap because he had to prove himself at this level? And if you do that, what message does that send to your team? What message does that send to your fan base?
And when you look at Travis Green and how he's progressed through this organization, Scott, he's paid his dues. He went down to Utica. You know, he started in the juniors, went down to Utica, worked a couple of years down there, came up and when Willie J. Darden was fired, he replaced him. And for all intents and purposes, he has been exactly what this team has needed in his time in Vancouver. If this organization, if they're going to keep Jim Benning, Scott, and to appease the fan base because of the fact that they're keeping Jim Benning, maybe Francesco Aquilini needs to think, okay, I got to make a splash with a big coach. I got to get a name. Someone that has done, you know, has had success at the NHL level, has gone to the Stanley Cup Final, has gone deep in the playoffs. I mean, if you look at Gerard Gallant, I mean, some were still pretty shocked that he got fired when he got fired in Vegas. He took Vegas to the Stanley Cup Final in their first year of existence. I mean, you look at a Claude Julien. I mean, he's had success in Pittsburgh. He's had success in Montreal. He's had success wherever he's gone. So maybe it's a fact where Scott ownership looks at this and they think, okay, if we're going to keep Benning, and I know the fan base is majority of them are not on the Jim Benning bandwagon, maybe we got to make a splash with the head coach. That could be what they're thinking.
Neil texts into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox at 650-650. How about stop listening to the Twitter idiots and recognize there is a majority of fans that believe in what Benning is doing? It's really difficult to say what the percentage is because we get a lot on the other side of this, Neil. And quite often when people are angry about something, they are more vocal. I think that's a fair point. I don't think it's just on Twitter. I do think that you hear this in the community. And I wonder if ownership is gauging that. Listen, maybe I'll be late to the party, and I've not been one that since last summer or any time along this has said, well, I'll tell you what, they're not bringing back the GM. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just unconvinced. I'm unconvinced right now because of the history. If you were, as Dan Murphy said, if you were, yeah, this is our guy, this is what we're moving forward with, and he believes this is the right coaching staff, why aren't you letting him negotiate that deal? I don't understand it, Karen. Something doesn't add up here. That's my whole point. Other people saying, hey, if they can book Chris saying, if they can pay for Louis, Sven, Spooner not to play, surely they can buck up to pay one of the better coaches to coach.
Also, too, Scott, when you look at it, if Elliot did say he believes the contract is guaranteed, right? It's not an option. It is guaranteed. If that money is guaranteed, is Francesco Aquilini, Scott, in a COVID world where the, you know, revenue has not been coming in, is he saying, well, I don't want to play, like, I got to stick with this GM. I don't want to pay him his salary to not be with the team anymore. I mean, there is that aspect of it as well. I don't think that's the driving aspect, but there is a financial aspect with all of this because Travis Green's not asking for the moon. He's asking for a couple million dollar raise. He's asking what he thinks he's owed. Jim Benning, we don't know what he's getting paid, obviously, but he's got a couple more years on his deal. Do you want to be paying two more years for a general manager who's no longer with your team when you haven't had revenue of any kind for about a season and a half?
It's a fair point, and we don't know what that guarantee looks like. We have no idea what the payout would be. I have no idea. We don't have the financial details of Jim Benning's contract. This is just a sampling of the polarizing conversation that occurs when this topic comes up. Anton in Vancouver, Benning has done nothing wrong. You're going to get some debate about that, Anton. He's given us all the players to win. Sign Benning. I'd love to see the Canucks win, win, win. Time to catch the Habs. Been a season ticket holder since 1987. Will always be one. The next text is, if Benning is back next year, you're going to see an awful lot of empty seats. I canceled my season tickets. I won't be back until Benning is gone.
And that's, I think, a lot of that. I heard that a lot, actually, after the Tanner Pearson deal went down, Scott. It's like, I'm done with this team. I'm done with giving them my money if this is what they're going to keep continuing to do. There is going to be a portion of the fan base, Scott, though, that is, you know, has gone a year and a half without seeing hockey live. I think there's a portion of this fan base where Francesco Aquilini is betting on the fact that he's going to be able to fill Rogers Arena because people are going to be starving to see live sporting events. This comes in unsigned text. Green is no AV who makes $5 million, not even close. No, he's not. Like, right now, we understand that he's making $1 million on his contract per season. If you're Travis Green, though, and you say, okay, fine, that's fine for an entry-level contract to an NHL head coach. Look at Dan Quinn as the equivalent in the New York Rangers, Scott. I understand it's the Rangers. It's under the lights of MSG. It's a little bit different situation with that organization. They've got a lot of money backing them. But, I mean, he's making $2.4 million per season around there. So he's already making more than Travis Green. And he could say, look, I got a better resume than Travis Green.
There are three tiers. There are three tiers as far as pay grades go in the National Hockey League when it comes to coaches. And it's not three different numbers, but we're talking tiers. Travis Green's in tier one right now, and the work he's done requires a move up to tier two. That doesn't mean it has to be the top end of tier two, but that's the move he's looking to make right now. What you're describing, Alain Vigneault, that's tier three. That's tier three, if we want to rank it that way. If you want to flip it around and say tier one's the best, bottom line is that $5 million range, that's the top tier. And Travis Green is not asking to move into that top tier and doesn't have a case to move into that top tier, quite frankly. But there's a number that if they hit in Vancouver, he stays. If not, I believe that he will look for that number on the market. Chris Johnson said as much in that clip.
Yeah, and this comes in from Shiloh. If it's all about the money, signing Green will be cheaper than bringing in a splash coach, and that's exactly what we're saying. A Gerard Glant is not going to come in for cheap. A Bruce Boudreau is not going to come in for cheap. You may be able, if it's about the money, you're probably going to get Travis Green at a much more economic advantage to your organization. Scott, this one comes in as well. Maybe the Aquilinis are waiting for the expansion check at the end of April so they can pay signing bonuses, whatever the case may be. Maybe they are. We don't know. We've heard that Seattle is going to give the first payment, I believe, soon, coming up at the end of this month, or they're due to. So maybe that's an avenue that is worth looking at. But I'd like to disagree with you on this one, Scott, but I can't, because there is a disconnect somewhere within the organization, whether it's Green not thinking the organization values him, whether it's Benning not being given the go-ahead to sign the guy that he wants, or whether it's Francesco Aquilini not wanting Travis Green as a coach next year. I mean,
this is what we don't know.
No.
This is what we don't know. It's why I'm not convinced that we know the direction of this franchise after this season. I'm just not convinced of it. And all of the math that leads to it and what Elliot Friedman said that we played for you earlier this segment, I don't doubt his information. And Elliot is right a whole lot more than he's wrong. Way more. I guess I'm just going to take a little longer. Maybe I'm slow to the party. I want to wait and see what happens after this season. We're going to get answers in 5 to 6 weeks' time. At least I would think we will.
Yeah, I mean, the season's over pretty soon, Scott. We're in a sprint to the finish, and I think we're going to get a lot of answers as soon as that puck is dropped finally on, what is it, May 16th, the last game for the Vancouver Canucks. This text comes in, I'm assuming Benning is back. I hope he does what he does best and drafts well, but his leash has to be a string. If Greener is not re-signed, I will lose it. I think it needs to be done before the season is out. P.S. Top Gun is the way of life. I hope you have a great sound system, Balak. That's from Tori in Langley.
Bill from Courtney says, Benning's done a fine job. We have never had the prospects and successful drafts as we have with Benning. That's worth more than free agent acquisition bust. Green is a solid coach. I like what the Canucks are doing. That is Bill from Courtney. This one, unsigned, comes in. The opinions are not equal. Majority are pissed off with Benning's crappy results. Results are what counts. Benning's teams have lost over 300 games.
Sorry, I'm reading some of these texts before they read them on air, Scott. I want to make sure some of them are clean. This one comes in, Shane from Cloverdale. Maybe Green doesn't want to be here and feels slighted by ownership. That's kind of what I threw out there a little bit a while ago. You know, if you're not going to negotiate with me from what I've delivered over the past few seasons, I mean, you know what? Maybe it's time to move on. And he says Green in Seattle next year. Well, there's always been that kind of rumor out there. If you kind of pick the tea leaves and tie them all together, I mean, he's got a relationship with the Pacific Northwest. We know where he coached his junior time down in Portland. So maybe there's that aspect as well. When it comes to being disrespected, I could totally see him feeling slighted by the team and ownership. I could totally see that.
Everything that I've heard about this situation is much more cut and dried than that, as opposed to emotional. And I don't think Green operates, when it comes to this type of thing, on an emotional basis. I think he has a number in his head, and if the Canucks hit that number, he's back. Like, I don't think he goes, oh, man, the way you guys have treated me. I also believe if it goes too long, he will find out what other number might come in. And we had somebody saying, like, where's he going? Is he going to Buffalo? No. Arizona? No, he's not going to those situations. Rick Tocchet might get an extension, by the way the Coyotes have been this year. I know it's a new GM, and he's a guy who needs to have years added to his deal if he's going to stay there as well. But who knows? He might be back. Seattle's been mentioned. Anaheim has been mentioned. There's some uncertainty as to whether or not Dallas Eakins is the guy there moving forward. Like, there are lots of potential landing spots, let's put it that way.
And there are the potential, Scott, for there to be coaches being fired after this season. I mean, there's four coaches right now in the NHL that don't have contract extensions. That's John Tortorella, Rod Brind'Amour, Rick Tocchet, and Travis Green. Rod Brind'Amour's not going anywhere. I mean, we know what Tom Dundon, how he likes to kind of lowball his coaches and his general managers and people in the front office. But, I mean, Rod Brind'Amour, he's a Carolina Hurricane for life, and you can't argue with the job that he's done there. John Tortorella, likely done in Columbus. I think we can all agree with that. You said with Arizona. We don't know. I mean, Rick Tocchet, new GM, he kind of had to prove himself. They're fighting for a playoff position right now. So maybe he stays. But there are going to be situations, Scott, where there are coaches, other coaches available, not just the ones we've mentioned. There's going to be firings. There is after every year. Maybe the Aquilinis are waiting to see what happens with the shakedown with all of that. I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Text comes in. The media has trained us to think Green is the only coach available for Canucks. Don't misconstrue the message. As I said earlier this segment, the coaching staff deserves an extension. That doesn't mean you have to give the coaching staff the extension. No one is suggesting that Travis Green is the Jack Adams Award winner. What I'm suggesting, I think what Karen agrees with, but I'll let her speak for herself, is that he's done a good enough job here to earn an extension. That he's, until this year, I'm not sure you can make an argument that Travis Green hasn't gotten the most out of his teams. No. Is that enough to say this will be the coach to take us to the next level? That's not my call. That's up to Jim Benning. That's up to Francesco Aquilini, ultimately, based on all the information we have, Karen. What I'm telling you is that every box along the way so far has been checked.
Yeah, he's basically made a progression every year. I mean, missed the playoffs the first, two, 3 years, and then he made the playoffs last year. You could argue that the only reason they made the playoffs because there was a bubble, because they were trending in the wrong direction when the season was starts. Yeah, but we don't know what that happened. You just look at the facts. They beat the defending Stanley Cup champions in the bubble in the first round and took a Vegas team that they were completely outmanned against to a Game 7 and had a very good chance of winning that game as well. I think when you look at Travis Green too, Scott, I mean, like, look what he's been saddled with on this roster. I mean, he's been forced to put a $6 million player in the... He's been not afraid to put a $6 million player in the box. He's been saddled with a bottom six, at least fourth line, that's making millions of dollars a year that he kind of has to play. He has no other choice. And I think when you look at what he has been saddled with and then what he's done with the young players, I think he's done a very admirable job with this roster and with what this team is.
We'll see what we hear from the Vancouver Canucks later today. Man, the texts are pouring in, so we will get to a number of them next. This is a very polarizing topic right now in Vancouver, and it's one that a lot of people have an opinion on, so we do want to get to that. Elliot Friedman had something else to say yesterday. It was a lengthy conversation that they had about it, and we'll play it for you next on Rintoul and Sermon.
You're listening to Rintoul and Sermon.
I'll tell you what. Maybe 50-50. I don't have the exact numbers because there are so many texts on the futures of the GM, the head coach, what the direction of this franchise should be. Like, that's pretty polarized. Everybody's on board with Greg needs to watch Top Gun. Like, every text come in saying, yeah, Greg, take care of that man.
What are you talking about, Scotty? There's so many saying, don't waste your time.
Those are from your wife.
I don't know about that.
Although you responded to one who said, like, watch Top Gun, and you said, I'm not sure how interested the wife will be. Mm-hmm. We have a female on this show. Karen, comment?
Yeah, like, in general, it's a great show because, I mean, you've got Tom Cruise, you've got Val Kilmer, I guess Anthony Edwards, you've got fast-flying fighter jets. But there is a scene in particular, and, you know, maybe this is just the female side of me, but there's a volleyball scene in there that I think your wife would be... should be okay to watch. Just, I'll leave it at that.
If you need my wife to text in, Greg, I think she will tell you to watch Top Gun.
So now she's
well.
Definitely not watching it. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. So now you're worried. This says more about you, Greg, than it does about her. But
yes.
Well done finding
yes,
Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins. One of the iconic cuts from that soundtrack.
Can I just say, like in the 80s, like Kenny Loggins had it made. Like, he makes three fantastic songs. There's probably more than that, but he's got Danger Zone. He's got Footloose. There's another one I can't think of off the top of my head, but I mean, man, he got a good gig, and he keeps getting paid for this stuff. It's like anytime these movies are paid, Kenny Loggins gets a check mark in the bank account going, another check going in.
Kenny Loggins has two cuts on that soundtrack alone, Karen. Then you've got Footloose in there. Can't recall their name right now, but there are two on the Top Gun soundtrack. Kenny Loggins did better than just the 80s, but we could have a future poll question one day if we were doing a different show. Who are the 80s better to, Kenny Loggins or Steve Guttenberg? But I will move on. It's Scott Rintoul. It is Karen Sermon. You can hit us up on that, or as most of you have wanted to the whole way, this conversation about the future of the Vancouver Canucks. Like, there's the immediate future that we've been talking about, the health and safety standpoint, and how many people can be back on the ice, what do you do over these next 19 games? Then there's the broader direction of this group. And I want to wait and see what happens after the course of the season. And it might be steady as she goes. It was a step back, but trust in the process, if you will. The phrase that has come into, you know, our parlance because of everything that happened in Philadelphia. And don't worry about a little misstep along the way. Things are going to get better. We trust the direction. It'll be Jim Benning. It'll be Travis Green. It'll be the coaches. All of that might be true. I'm just not convinced yet because I have seen ownership in Vancouver make changes when there has been what is viewed as disappointment. Now, we're operating in a pandemic, so it does throw the context of these conversations off.
Yeah.
But Dave Nonis, missed the playoffs, make a change. Mike Gillis, fan base, as they would say in Seinfeld, the sea was angry that day, my friend. And the way things ended in Vancouver, Mike Gillis was out and suddenly replaced Trevor Linden, Jim Benning. They come in to form the next regime. Did anyone see Trevor Linden not being a part of this operation a couple of years ago, Karen? And then suddenly, Trevor Linden was gone. There have been many unexpected moves along the way. Maybe I'm just being a little more patient. Maybe I should see the tea leaves for what they are. Like most people are saying, no, these are indications that things are going to be as they are. I've just seen a history with ownership in Vancouver that suggests to me we should probably just wait and find out till we get something a little more definitive.
I will say, Scott, you made the one good point in there, and I think this is where it exactly lies. We're in a pandemic. We've never seen this before. We've never seen the point where ownership has lost millions and millions of dollars, and the Aquilinis just haven't lost money just in, you know, not having revenue from the Canucks. They've also lost it in their other businesses, from what we understand, too. So they're operating in a loss this year. Scott, I think that if it was any other year, normal year, you have fans in the stands, and this is what happened with the organization, with the team, they're in this position, I think it would be a completely different conversation that we're having. I think you have to take the financials. They've never been more important in this conversation in the past as they are right now, because this is just unprecedented times. I mean, these owners just don't have the money.
Well, and if you want to go down that road and say, this is something that's coming, it's just going to have to wait a little bit longer, Michael's text that just comes into 650-650 has some relevance to it, who says, I'd like to see Green back, but I'm more interested in re-signing Ian Clark. Goaltending coaches are not married to coaching staffs. Quite often, they travel together like Barry Trotz and Mitch Korn, and that has been a very successful partnership. But Ian Clark came here independent of Travis Green. We all know that he came from Columbus. There's a possibility that you could re-sign one without the other, and it would be very, very difficult for anyone to argue. Like, there's an argument about Travis Green and what he is as a coach, and I understand the argument that occurs in Vancouver, though I think the majority of the fan base gives it a thumbs up as opposed to the other. Mm-hmm. With Ian Clark, there aren't detractors. Like, we don't hear from people going, you know what, too much is made about Ian Clark. No, he is viewed as one of the goalie gurus. So if you were going to get any business done and those two things operate independently, you would think that would have been the business that would have been taken care of so far, which does lead to the theory that this will get done. It's just going to take a little longer.
It's funny, Scott, because when you look at most NHL markets, do you think most fans can name their goalie coach? Honestly, in most markets. I mean, not even just say Canada. Like, do most casual fans know who the goalie coach is? No, this market is specific because of what he's done and his status in the NHL. Like, Ian Clark has come in and basically turned Jacob Markstrom into what he is or what he was prior to going to Calgary. I think there's concern, Scott, that you see as soon as goaltenders go away from Ian Clark, there is a decrease in their performance. I mean, it's there. The evidence is there. You saw Sergei Bobrovsky when he struggled in Florida when he left. You could argue that Jacob Markstrom struggled a bit when he left in Calgary. There's maybe that aspect as well. I think fans are worried. So you're signing Thatcher Demko, and Ian Clark has been such a big help in his development that if you want him to keep developing for the next 5 years, yeah, sign him individually from Travis Green. Doesn't matter. He is your guy. He's Thatcher Demko's guy. You got to sign him. I think that's a lot of what this fan base.
Not to take away from the work he's done, because he's done excellent work, but that would also lead you to believe that if you don't have Ian Clark, everything's going to fall apart. It didn't in Columbus, and they play a much different system. He's the guy who helped them scout their goaltenders, but look at what those goaltenders did last year against the Toronto Maple Leafs and how good they were. Like, Merzlikins and Korpisalo, unheralded by the general hockey populace. Yes, Clark helped develop them, but he wasn't there when ultimately they put in the work that they needed to in dispatching the Leafs. So it doesn't mean you can't be successful without Ian Clark, but there is a track record of success with Ian Clark. Those two things can be independent.
Yes, and I do think, Scott, though, the concern with this market is that you just signed your young goaltender who has had success under Ian Clark to a 5-year contract extension and a pretty good contract at that, especially when you look at where you expect Thatcher Demko to take you and him to take steps when it comes to year 4 or 5 of this deal. I think the scary thought in this market is if he goes, will there be any sort of aggression from Thatcher Demko? This text comes in. Oh, I got to find it. I was being called out for Travis Green. Here it is. Karen, name me one young player that Green has developed. One. Pettersson and Hughes don't count. They were NHL ready. Gaudette? Nope. Vertanen? Nope. Any defenseman? Nope. Zach McEwen, nope. Josh Bailey, nope. Green doesn't play the kids. Well, I would argue some of those players, Zach McEwen's got a chance lately before there was a shutdown to play some games. Justin Bailey maybe hasn't had the chance. I mean, you've got Ole Ulevi. Well, that's a bit of an argument. I would have suggested maybe we'd have seen him in a couple more games other than playing last February 23rd. But there is this, Scott, and you and I were throwing this around. You can't just blame him. You also have to give him credit where credit is due.
Just operate in the same context here, folks. This drives me crazy with the general manager drafting conversation as well. Well, Jim Benning doesn't get any credit for Pettersson and Hughes and the top-end talent they've got. That's just Judd Brackett. But any misses, those are on Jim Benning. And I know what theories are out there, and I know the narrative that wants people. Look, here's the way it always works. General manager, that's his draft class. Those are the prospects he's drafted. Some of them are misses. Some of them are hits. You can decide which side of that outweighs the other. Same with the coach. Well, Pettersson just showed up, and he was a Calder Trophy winner. Didn't matter who was behind the bench, he was going to win it. Brock Besser was going to be runner-up for that trophy. Same with Quinn Hughes. No credit is due to the coaching staff there, but on players I think should have been more than they actually have resulted in, I'm going to cast the blame. give Travis Green credit for the hits and give him the blame for the misses. But they're all on his record, not just some.
Yes, I completely 100% agree with you. This comes in from Marcus in the Ridge. What did they call Vancouver in the past? A goalie graveyard. Fans want Ian Clarke back more than they actually want Travis Green. You could argue that because of what he's done with his last two, since he's been here, what he's done with Jacob Markstrom and Thatcher Demko. And one thing we don't know, Scott, is we don't even know if we're going to see Thatcher Demko in the next couple of days. The Vancouver Canucks are, again, not practicing. They're doing individual workouts. Some are doing individual skates. We haven't seen the list yet. The expectation, as Dan Murphy said, that there should be some more players coming off the COVID list, but we don't even know if that's a goaltender. I mean, there may not be goaltenders, those two goaltenders available, Demko and Holtby, for Friday night. We could see Mikey DiPietro in net. We don't know. Like, this is like the point that we're at right now. It's just, I'm completely flabbergasted by the situation that we're in Vancouver right now.
Well, fingers crossed for the Vancouver Canucks, for their families as well, that more players come off the COVID list, that there are less experiencing difficult symptoms that have been reported by some along the way, and hopefully there is a healthier crew available for practice tomorrow than certainly we've been looking at throughout the course of the last couple of days. Where this all started, of course, a couple of weeks ago, we know who the first Canuck to be affected by COVID-19 was. That was Adam Gaudette. He is no longer a part of the organization. I wanted to play this clip from Elliot Friedman. It was a lengthy and expansive response about how Adam Gaudette got moved out of Vancouver. I thought Elliot did a very good job of talking the listener through this. Have a listen to Elliot talk about Adam Gaudette ultimately being moved by the Vancouver Canucks.
You know, we'd reported earlier this year that the Canucks had been in trade discussions for Gaudette. I'd heard Nashville and then I'd heard Boston. I'm sure there were more. I mean, this one with Chicago didn't drop at the last second. They were clearly talking to the Blackhawks too. What I didn't realize, and I know now, is I don't know if Gaudette asked for a trade, but I think they knew that if his role wasn't going to increase, and it wasn't, he would prefer to go elsewhere. And I want everyone to be very careful with the semantics here, because they are, to the people involved, they are important. I don't know if he ever asked for a trade, but I do think they knew he would prefer to go elsewhere if his role wasn't going to increase. And then the whole COVID situation hit. And look, like, I do want to be sensitive to this. You know, I don't know what the rules are out there. And I think you have to be very careful about these kinds of things. I don't know if him or anyone in his family were at fault. I don't know. What I do know, and like all you guys know, is that it was him first, and then it kind of got around. There's so much different information out there, okay? I had some people tell me that the media overblew the situation. I've had other people tell me that, no, that's not true, that some of the symptoms to some of the players were very serious, and they were upset. So what I usually believe, guys, is it's like a breakup, that there's he said, and then there's she said, or what one partner says, and then the other partner says, and the truth is somewhere in the middle. So do I think that all the Canucks are furious at Gaudette? No, I don't believe that. Do I think it's possible some of the Canucks are upset about how this all happened? Yes, I do believe that. So what I think is, you're the Canucks and you're sitting here and you're saying, okay, here's a player we've tried to trade. Here's a player that would like to go elsewhere. Here's a player that we don't think is going to be a bigger player than he already is for us. Let's work on getting it done. I think that's what happened. So, like, the person, like, I don't want anyone dumping on Ian McIntyre for this. Like, I will say this. This was very hard for me to do on the podcast because Ian is my teammate, and I really don't like disagreeing with teammates. So when Ian says that the Canucks tell him that the COVID situation didn't have anything to do with him getting traded, I could see why somebody in the Canucks organization would say that. Because what the Canucks can say is, you know what, we were going to move this player anyway. Okay. Do I think that's a bending of the truth? To some degree, yes. I do think that's a bending of the truth. But I think in the Canucks' eyes, this was a move that was going to happen. And even if this thing hadn't happened, it was only a matter of time until Gaudette got dealt. So I think that that is the clearest picture that I can paint for you.
I wanted to play that whole thing because there are a lot of different ways to paint it. And as Elliot points out through all of that, Karen, like most things in life, this isn't black and white. This is a lot of gray.
Yeah, and do I believe in thinking what Elliot said about the fact that are there maybe some Canucks that are annoyed with how the situation went down? I could see that because we have seen that COVID did transfer to some family members. So I could see that. I could see that some maybe being annoyed with how the situation happened. Again, we don't know exactly how it happened, but we do know who patient zero is. So I could see the annoyance in that.
I'm not going to tell any of our listeners how to feel. I'm not going to tell any of the Canucks how to feel. And that could be a very natural response, as you point out, Karen.
Yeah.
Let's go back a year. How did this all get started in sports? Like, what was the first incident we saw?
Rudy Gobert gets tested positive, and he goes out there and he does something maybe a little reckless and making fun of it. But again, it's one player.
But I want to talk about it in that locker room. Who was the next Utah Jazz member that we knew of to get it?
Donovan Mitchell.
And there were some hard feelings at the time. Now, those hard feelings have been repaired. Those guys are still teammates, and they've gotten past it. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't a raw conversation, a raw bunch of emotion at the time. That would be natural. It doesn't mean it's something you can't move past. It's just an in-the-moment reaction.
Absolutely. And when it affects your family, I could see those feelings being a little increased because, you know, now you're worried not just about yourself, but what this could do to somebody else. So I could see that. Could I see the Canucks not wanting to put blame on someone and trying to protect that person if they did do something wrong? Absolutely. I could 100% see that. I can see them spinning it in the fact that, yeah, we have been trying to trade them. I don't think that's a lie. Like, I think this is something that those sources to Elliot Freeman, to Ian McIntyre, like, those sources, I believe, are correct in their information and that Adam Gaudette has been on the trade block. Because we've heard this before, that people have been sniffing around when it comes to maybe what his availability is. Is there a scenario, Scott, too? Is there a scenario where you feel guilty that you're the one who did this? Because what if you or I to test positive? There's this, you know, you think, what's the first thing you think of? Who could I have affected? How many people could I have affected? Whether you did something wrong or whether you didn't something wrong, you immediately think like, oh my goodness, how far does this spread? Who in my bubble could have this? And then you think, well, what if I gave it to my kid? What if I gave it to my teammate in this situation, Scott? What if, like, you and I were in the same room, and what if I gave it to you, like, just unwittingly, unknowingly, because I didn't know I had it? Like, this is where your mind goes with what this thing is. So maybe there was, again, I'm throwing this out there. Is there a scenario where the player felt just awful and was like, people were interested in me before? Maybe there's, can I get out of here? I don't know. Maybe there's that scenario.
You just don't know. You just don't know. And as many of our listeners are pointing out in the text inbox, I don't think it's fair to be mad or upset at someone that gets COVID, says this texter. It's not like Gaudette wished to contract it. Should be pointed out, we still don't know that Adam Gaudette was the one who necessarily brought it in. We just know that Gaudette was the one who tested positive first. Any human that looks down on someone that has got it is just wrong. I don't care if you're a Canuck or not. That's not what Karen is talking about. That's not what I'm talking about. It's the natural reaction of some people when you feel like they've put your health or those close to you in jeopardy. It's just a natural reaction at the time. And it doesn't mean that it's something you can't get over. Look, I've got a wife. I've got two kids. Yeah, I understand that completely. You're less worried about yourself. You're more worried about those around you. And resentment can be an initial reaction. One that you can get past and one that you can say, you know, maybe I shouldn't have reacted that way. But as I said to our listeners earlier in the segment, Karen, I'm not going to tell our listeners how to feel, and I'm not going to tell anybody that finds himself or his family in a situation that he feels could have been prevented how to feel at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's you're going to feel how you're going to feel, and whether it's fair or not to the person, you're allowed to have those feelings. when it comes to it, like some people are saying, God, that maybe isn't patient zero. I mean, we've seen it can take up to 7 days for symptoms in some people. Maybe there was somebody else. It's just, again, we know that he was on the ice and taken off the ice, Scott. We know that he's the first person to tested positive, and then it kind of snowballed from there. So I don't think the organization maybe blames him and then they shipped him out because they blame him because he brought COVID in. I think Chicago came with them, Scott, with a, you want to do this? And the organization's like, yeah, we don't see Gaudette in our future in terms of being a 3C. He's kind of moved on from that. Let's get something in return. I mean, it could be just as simple as that.
Keep those texts coming in. I wish some people would just listen a little more closely. I really do wish people would listen a little more closely.
People like to hear what they want to hear, Scott. Especially if they disagree with you. We've learned that. We've learned that in this job.
Keep those texts coming in. Keep those texts coming in, whether they have basis or not. 650-650. It is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. A lot of you responding to the conversation about Ian Clark, that he has to be back. Well, everything Kevin Woodley said last month would lead you to believe that maybe that ship has already sailed. We'll see.
I just want to make a point here, Scott. One of the texters said, a couple of backpedalers, I guess you and I, 4 days ago you were both saying, quote, there's no way COVID had anything to do with the trade. Now this is your rhetoric. Here, I have said already, if you had listened to this week, I have said I went with Ian McIntyre's report, and I didn't think Gaudette should be blamed for this situation, and that was the reason why he was traded out. There has been other reporting since then, Scott, that said maybe this was a bit of the last straw, and it was somebody who already was kind of on the outs with the organization, and this just helped pull the trigger. We've heard those reports in this market already. You and I are not backpedaling on this. We are not. I've admitted that originally that was my thought, that was my opinion, and I've moved on from that. And I've been listening to everything out there that's coming in, and I'm making a new informed opinion. We're allowed to do that.
As are you as listeners. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. We will get back to talking hockey in the next hour. But as COVID plays into all of our lives and this pandemic continues, there are other events that are being affected or maybe are going to roll on. We are 100 days from what is supposed to be the start of the Olympic Games. We will talk to a potential Canadian athlete about that next right here on Rintoul and Sermon.
Now back to Rintoul and Sermon.
We flip from AM to PM. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. And we are counting down the days, but not the same way that many of these athletes are. Karen, it's 100 days. You noted that this morning in our pre-show conversation. A milestone of sorts for the Tokyo Olympics, which still feels like a finger-crossing event at this point.
It does. In one term aspect, Scott, it feels almost like a pipe dream. In another aspect, it seems like we can pull this off. It seems like that the world has turned a corner in where we are in this pandemic. It's kind of, you can look at it either way. I mean, you look at where we are in the world right now. I know 100 days is a long time, but the virus is raging in this country. The virus is raging still in the United States, even with their vaccination schedule. The virus is raging in South America, Europe, Africa. The only place it's not basically raging is Australia and New Zealand right now. I mean, it's one of those things when you look at the numbers, you think, how can they pull this off? I know vaccination schedules, I mean, they're hoping to ramp up around the world, but is it enough to pull this off? Is it safe enough to pull this off in terms of the pandemic? Is it safe enough for these athletes to have lack of training, go and put themselves, in the best competition of the world in the Olympics? Like, there's just so many questions surrounding this area. I want to believe, Scott, if we can pull this off, it means we have turned a corner in this pandemic. I'd like to believe that, but I just think that even 100 days from now, like, that just seems to me like so soon.
Japan as a nation has done a very good job relative to other countries in the world in dealing with COVID-19. So the actual setting for this is relatively safe compared to other countries. The question is, can you bring in people from all over the globe in countries that are dealing with this in a variety of manners, some doing much better than others, and have this go off safely? We know fans aren't going to be descending upon Japan. They're not going to be going to Tokyo and cheering and congregating in the ways that we've seen in the past. So now it becomes about the athletes. And you and I both know this. There will be some federations and there will be some countries that have already or will in coming days push their athletes to the front of the line to say, look, if you're going to represent our country, and there's a very good argument to be made here, if you're going to represent our country, we're sending you on international travel, we better make sure that you're as safe as possible. There'll be others that say, hold on a second, this isn't a necessary event.
Yeah,
why are we
jump the queue.
Why are we jumping the queue for that? And depending on what country you live in, depending on what federation you talk about, people are going to have mixed reviews on one or the other.
I mean, you look at a country like the United States, Scott, I mean, their vaccination rollout has been probably the most in the world. I mean, I believe they're vaccinating over 4 million people a day at this rate. A lot of people have had their second shots and are fully vaccinated. I could see the United States being one of those countries, Scott, where it says, okay, if you want to be vaccinated to go over to Japan, you can jump the queue and get it. I could see that. Here in Canada, our rollout's been a lot slower. I mean, we're doing it based on age, and the government has says no one is jumping the queue. No one gets preferential treatment. So when it comes to athletes, maybe that'll change down the road, especially when you come to June, and the expectation is, at least here in BC, that all of us who want it will be able to have our first shot by June. So maybe the government's changed their minds in terms of that. But it's one of those things where it's a touchy subject, right?
Well, we've already seen a change. We've seen a change along the way. Like Whistler has been moved into a priority sequence relative to the rest of the province because of the outbreak.
But there was an outbreak, yeah. But that's an outbreak versus, you know, professional athletes.
These are not professional athletes, just to clarify. We're talking about amateur athletes in almost all cases. But no, I understand. I understand what you're talking about. Again, it's a touchy subject. And the Olympics and the uncertainty surrounding it, I can only imagine what that's like mentally, let alone physically, for athletes right now. Let's bring one on. Natasha Wodick, Canadian distance runner, and she is qualified for the Tokyo Games, though, to the best of my knowledge, and Natasha's going to clarify this for us, we hope, that doesn't necessarily mean she's going. Natasha, thank you very much for doing this. How are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
No problem whatsoever. And you ran a great marathon time last year at 2:26. You qualified to be part of Canada's team at the Olympics, and then we all know the Olympics got postponed. What is your current status with Team Canada as a runner, and whether or not you'll be headed to Tokyo?
Well, it's a little more complicated than it has been in years past, because with the Olympic criteria this year, it's not just you run the standard and you are top three in your country and you go. Now there's also a ranking system. So if you're ranked in the top half of your field, you can qualify that way. So it begins to get quite complicated. So, and there's also, you can qualify in the marathon by placing top 10 at a world major marathon. So now they're taking, like, an individual who placed ninth at World Championships, Lindsay Tessier. She has qualified as well as I have with my time. So how do you compare my time versus her place? So that will be up to our, you know, national team committee when they decide who goes. They'll take the winner of our marathon championship with the qualification, and then the next two are their discretion. So they can choose to take the next two fastest times that have qualified, or I don't know what they're going to do. So where it sits right now, I have the second fastest time in Canada, and so I'm hoping that that will be good enough to get me on the team, but I still don't know.
Athletes are a very structured, regimented group. What is it like trying to prepare living with this uncertainty?
You know, I think we're almost used to it now. So all that we can do is basically prepare as if we're racing, because that's the only way to do it. And if it gets postponed again, or if it doesn't happen, then so be it. But I am just full in as if I'm racing the marathon on August 8th at the Olympics. I am training as if I'm going.
Natasha, I know before the Olympics were postponed the last time last year, you had been vocal about the fact it's not just about your training. Like, you can go out and run, but there's a lot more that goes into that. There's physiotherapy, there's massage, there's nutrition and all that aspect of it. And it was, you know, can you get the proper full training experience leading up to the Olympics? What has the last year been like for you in terms of getting all that and having proper training?
Yeah, you know what? I feel extremely fortunate that here in Vancouver, our massage therapy, physio and chiro has been open and functioning since basically May. So mm-hmm. I have been able to access my support team, and we are allowed to train with our groups outdoors. So I've been able to do that. I also have my own little gym downstairs and an elliptical. So I'm very fortunate that I've been able to maintain almost the exact same level of training that I would in non-COVID, except for the races. But it's not an equal playing field because not everybody across Canada has the same access to gym facilities and to their, you know, physio and chiro. I don't know in parts of Canada if those things are open. I'm not sure. Do you know?
Well, I know just specifically off the top of my head, like Manitoba, where my family lives, I believe in just the last week they opened gyms once again, or I mean, the last month they just opened gyms once again. And I believe for a long time, you know, massage, physio and all that stuff was deemed non-essential services.
Yeah. So that's exactly what I mean. Like, how is that fair that people from these provinces are not getting access to the same, you know, support that athletes in BC are? So we have an advantage, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the same as like in the US. I mean, they're all, those athletes, they're all vaccinated. So they, you know, they can train and feel a lot safer than we can.
Has there been any contact to you by, you know, Athletics Canada or anything like that in terms of anything in the prospect of being vaccinated?
No, we were told that, you know, we get vaccinated just like everybody else. Like, there's no priority for us. So,
right. In terms of competitive advantage when it comes to the Olympics, like I look at Australia, you just mentioned the US where they've been vaccinated. Some of the athletes have been vaccinated, have been able to train without worry of this virus. I look at somewhere like, say, Australia, where they've been kind of functioning as a normal society for quite a long time because of the lockdown that they went into and how they're able to control the virus spread in that country. If you look at going to the Olympics, are you concerned about the competitive advantages that some countries may have?
You know, not so much myself. Like, I do feel like I had mentioned before that I have been extremely fortunate to have been able to maintain my training with my support team quite well. But it's not the case for every country. So do I think it's going to be a level playing field for every country? No, I don't.
Natasha Wodak, Canadian distance runner, joining us here this morning. The Olympics now 100 days away. Natasha hoping to be part of the Canadian team that travels to Tokyo. With all of that backdrop, what you talked about with health and safety protocols, everything we've been through, trying to get ready, how much apprehension do you have about going if you are in fact able to go?
I'm not really that nervous. I know from the time that I traveled to Arizona for that marathon in December, I felt quite safe. All of the protocols that are being followed by races are, you know, lots of COVID tests, staying isolated, masks on until the race. So I feel, you know, like the Olympics is going to be like next level safe. I think we're all going to be tested like crazy and staying isolated and in our bubble. And so I do feel safe with it. Yeah.
Karen mentioned the competitive landscape. There's not going to be the same number of fans there that there would have been in the past. Obviously, safety and health protocols in the Olympic Village are going to be a lot different than they have in the past. Do you feel as though you'll be missing something at all if you do, in fact, get to go?
What do you mean, missing something?
And I mean from the atmosphere. I just mean from everything that goes on at the Olympics outside of just the competition itself, Natasha.
Oh, absolutely. When I think back to Rio, my favorite memories involve my parents. And that moment when I got to hug them after my race in the stands was incredibly special. And spending time with them at Canada House, you know, that's part of the Olympics. And the journey of the Olympics isn't just mine. It's mine and my family's. They've been there for me by my side and my coach. And the fact that they don't get to be a part of it at all, and none of our families and coaches get to be there, it's sad. And not getting to really experience the village in the way that we should is a huge part of the games. And it's sad. I almost cried when I found out that, you know, friends and family and personal coaches are not going to be there. Like, that's a huge part of the Olympics.
I totally agree with you, and though it is not on the same level whatsoever, I once heard someone say at the Boston Marathon, I run to get to Boston, but I don't try to run my best time in Boston because I'm just here for all of the surrounding atmosphere and everything I'm going to experience on the day. And to lose that, man, it must take away a little bit of the motivation when you're trying to get yourself ready.
You know, at the end of the day, the most important part of the Olympics is going there and performing, having the best performance of your life. So I'm just trying to concentrate on that, and that knowing that back home, my family and friends will be supporting me. And when I get home, we'll be able to hopefully celebrate together, and that I want to go and represent my country and run to the best of my ability. So just trying to focus on that, and that's all I can do.
Natasha, I wish you the best. I hope that you get to know soon. Do you have any idea when a decision is going to be made about whether or not you're on the team when these other teams get finalized?
Yeah, I should know early June, June 1st or June 2nd.
Man, that can't come soon enough, I imagine, from a certainty point of view.
Yeah, it'll be really nice to know for sure, and then be able to make some real concrete training plans.
Well, we'll see you running around the Lower Mainland. I think a lot of people who watch over the Lionsgate Bridge or are out in kits, they've seen you running by before, North Vancouver as well. Continued excellence with your training. We wish you all the best in terms of health and safety as well, and I hope we'll be cheering you on this summer in Tokyo.
Thank you so much. You guys stay healthy too.
That is Natasha Wodak, Canadian distance runner, is qualified with a marathon time, may focus on the 10,000 meters as well. Mm-hmm. It's got to be difficult. Like, people train 4 years for this, Karen, and then it gets pushed back a year, and you think you've qualified, but now you're not quite sure. And as she said, okay, whoever wins the Canadian Marathon Championship, that person's going. The next two are at discretion. So does that discretion come at, well, who's going to be in the best shape to go given the training conditions that these people have been operating in? How do we weight one event that took place 6 months ago compared to an event that took place last year that compares to an event that took place 2 months ago in which not everybody could compete? It's a difficult decision, and man, these athletes are in a bind.
Yeah, you know, I don't envy the people who have to make the decisions as well, because it is at their discretion, so they're probably going to have to leave someone who feels they're very deserving off the team. It's really tough. I mean, I could only imagine, Scott, what the last year has been like for some of these athletes. And like Natasha said, for her, I mean, we live in a place, Scott, and you and I know how fortunate we've been through this pandemic to still be basically able to go outside every day. Gyms have been open through the entire pandemic. You know, you've basically been able to go get a massage or a chiropractor, maybe not say for the first couple of months, but you've been able to live your life as normal as say you can within this pandemic settings. Like I had mentioned Manitoba, like my friend works at a gym and they just finally reopened. She hasn't worked since, I want to say probably this summer, because that's when the numbers were low. But when numbers started to increase, they shut everything down. You couldn't do anything. So when you talk about competitive advantages, it's just alone within our athletes within Canada. Like, how competitive have they been able to be in their training in the last 6 months when you look at a country like Australia that basically hasn't changed? I mean, they shut everything down. Those athletes have been able to live their lives, train the best of their abilities since the pandemic hit. So it's interesting because it's different for every country. I do hope we see it in the fact, because as I mentioned earlier before we spoke to Natasha, that maybe it shows we're turning a corner when it comes for this pandemic. But there's still so many uncertainties when it comes to level of competitiveness, how healthy these athletes are, where the world is in terms of COVID. I mean, there's just so many question marks that to be answered in the next 100 days.
Let's be real. Some of these athletes will have been COVID positive over the course of the past year and change. How are they coming back? How does that affect some of the decision making? How do you have a really good grip on who is primed to go and perform for the country? And it's difficult to know. And I really feel for the athletes who went out there last year. And remember, you're giving up a good chunk of your life to get yourself peaked for something that happens every 4 years, in this case now five, and can you maintain that? Like, we talk about the CFL, for example. The CFL has lost a number of players who will never play football again because of last year being postponed. And they've either moved on to other career opportunities, or they've aged out, or they've just decided, I don't know if I can do this anymore with the uncertainty surrounding this occupation. There's going to be Olympic athletes like that. There are going to be some who were qualified, but a year later say, guys, I don't know. I'm sorry. I had to move on with life.
Or you look at Scott, too. It's like that was the last gasp, and you had trained age-wise, like you said, aged out. There's some people that are maybe, and I don't know, you know, the oldest age to be in the Olympics for an athlete is, but say it's someone in their 32, and they thought, this was my last Olympics, and I geared up for 4 years to get there. And one more year, Scott, of postponing that and trying to train for that, just puts too much stress on their body. Like, there's that aspect as well. So we don't know the caliber of athletes and the health that they're going to go over there in. There's just, again, it's like the world we live in. It's like the Vancouver Canucks. There's so many more questions than answers right now.
Michael in Pitt Meadows says, Canada is now vaccinating over 200,000 people per day, depending on which province. Some numbers higher, some numbers lower, but he's talking about in general. Michael says, we typically send somewhere around 300 athletes to the Summer Olympics. That's 0.15% of the daily vaccines. If we just give those athletes vaccines ahead of the queue, if we wait a month, that percentage will be even lower. Just vaccinate them. It will be good morale to watch our athletes compete. That is one point of view. Others will say, hold on a second here. It'd be good morale to know that our first responders are all vaccinated when they're putting themselves in very difficult circumstances, health and safety-wise, on a daily basis. And here's the other complicated part of that, Michael, that we were trying to get to with Natasha, and I think most people heard come through. There's uncertainty as to who these Olympic athletes are going to be. So do you put all of the potentials on the list if you're going down that road? It's a really complicated conversation.
Yeah, and it's something I guess we're going to get answers over the next little while, Scott. 100 days out. I saw that this morning, and I thought, whew, that seems quick. I mean, it's a long time away. I understand it's 3.5 months, but it's still pretty quick in the grand scheme of things when you're dealing with a pandemic.
We will get back to talking hockey in just a few minutes' time. Notes and quotes coming your way. There are a couple of bigger hockey stories making the rounds today. We'll get into a couple of those that involve games tonight. One of the biggest ones, I would say, today is Jack Eichel being shut down for the season. I think most people assumed he was not going to play again this year. Karen, when you hear that he's having surgery and that it's for a herniated disc in his neck, that probably sounds worse than it actually is. Obviously, it's bad enough to keep him out this year, but based on the reports that are out there right now, Eichel will be ready to go for next season. The real question is, does he play that next season in Buffalo or somewhere else?
Yeah, I would not be surprised this summer, Scott, if I hear reports out there that Jack Eichel is asking to get out of Buffalo. I mean, he said all the right things. He signed that contract extension. He said he wants to see this organization succeed and be a Buffalo Sabre. They tried to appease him and bring in Taylor Hall. We know how that didn't work out. Who knows what the coaching situation is going to be like there, Scott? Kevin Adams, is he bringing in someone else to help him out? Is there a president of hockey operations? I know there's a report again today that, is it Jason Carmanos, is going to be assistant general manager under Kevin Adams. So some help, some guy who's been around in the league, someone who worked with Pittsburgh. Again, do you make the Pittsburgh comparison? Because there's a name out there that Jason Carmanos knows very well, and that is Jim Rutherford. Does he come in a veteran role? I mean, there's some pieces to connect there. But I would not be surprised, Scott, if I heard this summer that the reports that Jack Eichel wanted out of Buffalo.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh connection's an interesting one for a couple of reasons. Firstly, their former general manager was also an AGM in Pittsburgh prior to taking the job, and that is Jason Botterill, who got unsummarily dismissed.
They had a former coach as well from Pittsburgh.
Dan Bylsma. That's Bylsma. Back in the day, but they've gone through coaches at a pretty rapid rate in that organization. Now they hire Jason Carmanos to be the assistant general manager. I suppose if you're a Sabres fan, you go, okay, it's not as skeleton a crew as it has been after they had what Hockey Insiders called the Red Wedding last summer, where they fired, I believe, 22 people and said, Kevin Adams, you and whatever's left, you're running the show from now on. So, hey, we're bolstering the front office. That's good news. They still don't have that legitimizer. They don't have that. And Carmanos has experience, but they don't have – you mentioned Jim Rutherford. Like, I look at the Islanders, and that looked like such a rudderless ship for so long, and how quickly it turned around by bringing in Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz. And I know those two guys aren't exactly available every single day, but they saw an opportunity, and they took it. Whether it's Jim Rutherford or someone else, if I'm Buffalo, if I'm the Pegula family, that is the first place I'm looking, with all due respect to Jason Carmanos and what he might bring to that front office. Go get that person who's going to set the tone from the top on down in that president of hockey operations role, unless you decide to move on from the GM, which it doesn't look like you're doing. Go get that person to legitimize and stabilize your franchise and send the broader message across hockey. Look, we finally have stability. Look what they did in Edmonton, Karen. Mm-hmm. Ken Holland, they finally brought him in. It's okay. We're not going to churn this all the time. Dave Tippett, we're not going to churn this all the time. I don't know where exactly this gets us to with this combination, but it's going to be here for a little while. They don't have that in Buffalo.
Yeah, and it all started, I think, with Bob Nicholson too, Scott. Like they said, we're not going to keep bringing in guys from the old boys club. We're going to bring in someone who has had success with, obviously, Hockey Canada, knows how to run not just a hockey team, Scott, but an organization. I mean, if you look at what Bob Nicholson is, I believe he's the whole president of the Oilers Entertainment Group, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong on that, but I think he has a bigger role. But you bring in someone who's used to running a big, major organization. Now, Jim Rutherford, he has that street cred, right? Like, I'm just throwing that name out there. He's someone who has street cred. You know, I don't know if he has the respect of the general managers, but he's been long enough that he's, you know, he's made deals in this league. He's put together a Stanley Cup contender. And when you look at what has to happen in Buffalo, I mean, there is major surgery that has to happen there. Major surgery. So it'd be interesting to bring in someone who's done that, maybe not had to do that job before, but has built Stanley Cup contenders in the past.
Is that the first time Jim Rutherford and street cred have been used in the same sentence?
I like it. I like it.
Oh, I do too.
Probably.
I think you're
probably.
Right. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm just not sure the two have ever been associated in the past in one sentence. She's Karen Sermon. I'm Scott Rintoul. Notes and quotes coming your way next. Somebody's coming back to the lineup for the first time in a long time, and you'll hear from him on the other side on Rintoul and Sermon.
Rintoul and Sermon.
Vancouver Canucks will get back on the ice today and speak at some point this afternoon. Individual workouts, training sessions, whatever you want to call them, that's what they are. This is not a full team practice. JT Miller will address the media. So JT Miller is someone who was off the COVID list this entire time, not somebody who was on it. I imagine that is a very targeted choice to not have to answer questions about going through COVID right now, as opposed to just being away from the ice right now. We'll hear from those players in coming days, or so you would think. Obviously, media procedures are a little bit different, but we'll hear. We'll hear a little bit from JT Miller today.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, he was on the COVID list, Scott, to start the season. From all intents and purposes, was a close contact to Jordy Benn, was not an actual testing positive. But as of right now, I mean, until we find out till further notice, there's still 16 players on the Canucks COVID list, including both of their goaltenders. Dan Murphy earlier said today, you know what, I expect a couple more players to come off that list. We'll have to see who they are. Did it just come out, Scott?
It did not, but we do have a transaction in the last hour here. The Vancouver Canucks have recalled Guillaume Brisebois and Arthur Silovs to the squad. So we do know about some additions. So if you're trying to formulate, okay, who might be available, there are a couple more names to add to your list as the Vancouver Canucks try to assemble a team for Friday, a team for Saturday, and along the way get more people available to play.
Yeah, obviously, Breezeball and Silvas were recalled when this COVID situation hit. Scott, of course, they were not in the United States with Utica. For those that don't know, they were loaned out to Canadian AHL franchises to play. So they were able to come in. They, of course, have been with the organization. When you look at who is on the list, Scott, right now, not to get too into it, but there is one, two... five defensemen, Nate Schmidt being one of the most recent ones to go on there. You've got a bunch of forwards as well, and some of those, I believe, not taxi squad players. There's one close contact as well. And something to be noted as well, Scott, is the fact that, like, when the trade deadline happened, Adam Gaudet had come off of the COVID list. Jordy Benn was never on this COVID list, so they did trade two players away who could potentially have played in these two games. The two players they brought in, though, because they were in the United States, they are currently in their 7-day quarantine, so they will not be available to play for the Vancouver Canucks this weekend.
We'll see who will be. It's Scott Rintoul, it's Karen Sermon. More updates as this day continues, and with Bick and the Boss coming up next, I imagine you're going to hear from JT Miller as quickly as we can get that audio turned around on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Karen, at this time every day, or in and around this time every day, we try to do notes and quotes, things that are happening around the National Hockey League. There was only one North Division game last night. There are two tonight. One of a lot more consequence than other.
Yeah.
If you're talking Flames and Habs. And important for both teams in different reasons. Look, the Habs still have games in hand on Calgary. The Habs still control everything that happens on that fourth spot to get into the playoffs. And while most people feel Calgary getting there is a pipe dream, Vancouver trying to make a run at it is a pipe dream, if you're going to make that dream come true, it all begins with the Montreal Canadiens getting into a bit of a slump. The Flames can help their own cause as soon as tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to looking at Montreal and Calgary, Scott, I mean, five of their next seven are against each other. Five times the next 13 days. You kind of have to look at it as a series. You need to go about 4-1 or 5-0 if you're Calgary. And you need those games to be in regulation, Scotty. You can't have any three-point loser point games. 3-2 does nothing for you if you're Calgary. You have to go on a bit of a run. And in the four games this season, the Flames are 3-1 against the Montreal Canadiens. And none of those games, Scotty, surprisingly, have gone to the extra frame and had that loser point. So I guess if you're Calgary, you're looking at the positive side of things. You know, if we're going to get things started, we won two in a row now. Beat Toronto last night. That loser point didn't mean anything because Toronto is not the team that you're catching. So you've got two now against Montreal in Montreal. If you're going to make a run, if you can come out of Montreal with two wins, you're now on a four-game win streak and trying to cut that down just a little bit, you know, that Montreal lead.
Yeah, both of these teams coming off wins over the Leafs, Montreal on Monday. As you mentioned, Karen, the Flames got it done last night. They win that game on a beautiful move by Johnny Gaudreau in tight,
yes,
on his recent teammate and now opposition, at least last night, David Rittich, gets the job done, gets the extra point there. If you're the Calgary Flames, you don't care about giving up a loser point to the Toronto Maple Leafs, but you would in this situation. Calgary got to three last night, which has been a difficult task. It took extra time, but they got to three. And there have been some that said, well, is it a matter of confidence with the Flames? Is that why this group that has, in previous years, not necessarily last year, but 2 years ago, scored a lot more? Is that the big reason? Daryl Sutter says no. It's not confidence with this group. Have a listen.
Well, the perception is that when you don't score, that you don't have confidence, but it's totally the wrong one, Brendan. This team has worked hard and played with confidence right through. I think there's young guys that are learning the league, and even though they've been in the league for a number of years, the league changed and the style of game changed. So that's the big adjustment. It's got nothing to do with offense or scoring or any of that at all. It's being able to play a complete game the way the game's being played now.
We're not good enough to score. That's kind of what he said.
I mean, there is some that subscribe, Scott, to the theory that, you know, you can get snake bitten. You just, you know, you're hitting posts. You're just missing by that much. And if you see a fluky goal go in, it just somehow changes how you perceive shooting at the net and where how you see the net. So there is some that prescribe to that theory as well. I think when it comes to the Calgary Flames, there's something to be said with what Daryl Sutter's saying. I mean, maybe not confidence, but his team has taken a little while to try and figure out how to play the style of hockey that he wants them to play.
Well, and in his opinion, and what he's reinforcing there is, we don't have enough guys on this roster that are willing to do or have been able to do the necessary things to score in this league. He has hammered that time and time again. Call it talent, call it willingness, whatever you want to label it. Daryl Sutter's been pretty clear on this. We heard him just last week say, well, we don't have a 30 or 40 goal guy. Like, that guy doesn't exist on the roster. And when there was a little bit of pushback on that, well, you've got guys who've scored 30 and another mm-hmm. guy who's been at 99 points. His answer was, well, they haven't done that this year now, have they? It's been pretty clear as to what he wants on this team, and there's a bunch of dudes who are not going to be a part of that moving forward.
Basically, what Daryl Sutter wants, Scott, is he wants his players to play the way that he wants them to play and be able to score within the system that he wants them to play. He's also been that player, that coach that says, we're going to win hockey games 3-2. We're going to win hockey games 2-1. So he understands that in his style of play, you're not going to be scoring, you know, 5, 6, 7 goals a night. It's just, it's Daryl Sutter saying, it's my way. Figure it out, guys.
Given some of the pieces that are missing in Montreal, it leads toward a low event game more so than it would have early in the season. Brendan Gallagher remains out. Ben Chiarot still not ready to go. They've got injuries in that lineup right now. We'll see when they mm-hmm. get some bodies healthy again. They're getting one back. Now, I don't know what he's going to be able to give, but he's not going to be pressed back into action right out of COVID the same way that many Canucks players will. He is Yoel Armia, and he was the player who went on the COVID list. His last game, in fact, was against the Vancouver Canucks on March 20th. He contracted the UK variant of the virus, and this is Armia this morning talking about playing his first game since he's gone through everything he's gone through with COVID.
Yeah, it was like the first 4 or 5 days, probably 4 days. I had some little symptoms, some body aches, but nothing too crazy. So for the most part, I felt good.
Once you did recover, what was sort of holding you back from getting onto the ice? You said that you had body aches, but like from a conditioning standpoint, did that suffer too? You know, just your energy level and strength as a result of the virus?
No, really. I think my energy was good. I think the guys here just followed the protocol and just went from there. So, like I said, the first 4 days I had symptoms, but after that I felt pretty good. So, yeah.
And hopefully for Armia, hopefully for the Vancouver Canucks that are going to come out of it, they can get up to whatever speed they're able to without too many complications along the way. We just don't know. It's different for each and every athlete, Karen.
And you could say, too, there's been a luxury with that training staff, too, in the aspect that it was just one player. They could maybe, if he was, and he didn't say it, but if there was some lingering effects, Scott, in him getting ramping up his training, it was just one player. You know, they didn't have to rush him back. I'm not saying that the Canucks are being rushed back, but I am saying the Canucks are being rushed back because...
Well, they are. They are being rushed back. There's no other way to paint it.
Yeah. So, you know, Joel Armia, if he was feeling some after effects of this and it took him a little bit longer to get ramped up because he's been out for what, 14 days now, I think, since Montreal came back from that their little COVID break, maybe even a little longer. I'd have to look at the schedule, but it's been the slow approach with Joel Armia, and the Canucks are not being afforded that in terms of how they're having to come back to the lineup.
No, and this is where open communication comes in as well with your training staff, with your coaching staff, and athletes are relatively famous in the grand scheme of things for hiding injuries, hiding how they're feeling. I can overcome this obstacle. I'm not going to say anything is wrong. Mm-hmm. This is critical that Travis Green and his training staff make it clear to the players, guys, look, we need to know that you're as good as you possibly can be. And if you doubt in any way that you can be out there, we need to take a pretty cautious approach here.
Yeah, you got to tell the truth. You can't fight through this. This is, you know, your prolonged health that could be at risk. When it comes to the Montreal Canadiens, Scott, I know you said Brendan Gallagher's out. Ducharme did give an update on that. He said he had an appointment with the doctors yesterday. They're still trying to determine. I guess they were waiting for the swelling to go down. He still hasn't determined if he needs surgery or not, so they are still trying to figure that out. Carey Price, I believe, is inching closer to getting back in the net as well. And if you're the Montreal Canadiens, you're probably happy you're seeing Jake Allen. I know you've had success against the Montreal Canadiens this season, but he is 0-2 against you if you're the Flames. So there you go.
Jets and Senators, the other all-Canadian matchup. This one not near the same implications, but does feature a team on one side of the cut line and one on the other. One of the big storylines going into this game actually doesn't involve the Winnipeg Jets and their scoring prowess. It involves the Ottawa Senators. Connor Brown is on an 8-game goal-scoring streak right now. And just to put that in perspective, only Jaromir Jagr and Teemu Selänne have longer goal-scoring streaks in the last 25 years. That's a long time. He can match Jaromir Jagr tonight, who got to 9. Teemu Selänne had a streak of 11.
How about this, Scott? You know, you're in the conversation with Jaromir Jagr and Teemu Selänne. You can only hope that Connor Brown's career goes in the direction of Teemu Selänne and Jaromir Jagr. That's pretty heavy, heady company to be in if you're that kid.
Connor Brown, the former Leaf, tied with Austin Matthews for the longest goal-scoring streak this season. Chris Tierney, his teammate, saying the team's having a lot of fun rallying around that right now.
The two wingers that you've played with here for the last couple of games, get a quick comment from you on Alex Formanton and maybe a comment as well on the red hot Connor Brown. Is it all about the centerman here in this case? I think you have 3 assists in his last 3 games.
I mean, you can tell him that. We'll see what he says. But no, it's they're great players. You know, they both skate really well, so that makes it a lot easier to play with when you know they have speed to beat D, and you put pucks into space where they're going to get open. So you know, I like our line right now. I think we're generating a good amount of offense and you know, playing well defensively too. So, you know, hopefully we can just keep building and trying to get better every game. But I've enjoyed playing with those guys so far.
Yeah, I'd enjoy playing with a guy who's on an 8-game goal-scoring streak too. You get a lot of apples that way. Just get him the puck. Matt Murray's going to make his first start tonight since March 10th. There have been some very good stories with the Senators this season, despite all of the losing. We mentioned Connor Brown, Drake Batherson, Tim Stützle among them. Matt Murray, not among the good stories so far, and they are tied to him contractually for the next 3 years beyond this one.
Yeah, when you look at what Pierre Dorion's done over the last little while, you could give him, you know, some pretty passing grades. He did trade away at the deadline, you know, got a bunch of picks for some veteran depth defensemen that he traded to potentially cup-chasing teams. But when you look at what Pierre Dorion has done over the last little while, and that Matt Murray contract kind of sticks out with an asterisk, Scott, it's like, well, if you judge it on the first bit of this season, it's terrible, but maybe down the stretch he can find regain his confidence in that. I mean, I don't know, but if you're Pierre Dorion and the Ottawa Senators, you hope that this becomes a good story over the next few seasons. When it comes to the Winnipeg Jets, did you see, Scotty, last night the story on how Jordy Benn found out that he had been traded to the Winnipeg Jets? If our listeners haven't seen this, so Jordy Benn was just sitting at home. He's in quarantine because all the Canucks are in quarantine at this point. And he gets a text from Nate Thompson, of all people, saying emojis with the Jets, like the symbol of the Jets. And he's like, hey, what's up? He's like, oh, dude, you just been traded to the Winnipeg Jets. He's like, I have? He's like, yeah. And he goes on, he looks on the TV, and he sees he's been traded. So it's funny how players found out these days. Like, the GM telling him he's been traded is the last way that he found out that he's been traded.
Nate Thompson, let's give him a little more credit than that. He actually texted Benny with a couple of Jets.
Okay.
He made the same joke that we did when we found out Jordy Benn was on his way to Winnipeg. So Nate Thompson was doing the same thing in making his name as an insider in this business by breaking the news to Jordy Benn.
Hey, you're going to find out some way. We've heard some funny stories about the fact. Isn't that how Brendan Morrison, we had him on the show last week, he found out from a teammate that he was going to Chicago. So in these days, Scott, social media, the GM's not always the one to tell you that you're going. Jordy Benn will not be in the lineup for Winnipeg. He's still in quarantine right now. However, Scott, when he does come back to the lineup for the Winnipeg Jets, he's going to honor his former teammate in Elias Pettersson and wear number 40.
I like that. They presented him with some number options yesterday. He saw 40 and went, yeah, okay, I'll give a little nod to Petey. I'll wear 40. Yeah. Similar players. Similar players.
I'm trying to find one similarity to like throw out there, some obscure one, and I can't even do that.
They were
both former Canucks.
It's a guy Beard. Who's worn. This guy's worn 4, so he throws a 0 on there, and now he can give a cap tip to Petey as well. Nate Thompson breaking that trick. You better be right when you do it. Did you hear Eddie Lack's story yesterday?
No, I didn't.
Well, Eddie Lack got caught, like actually some members of the Vancouver media did a few years ago. So it's not just Eddie Lack, by the way. You know this as well as I do. Every single year around trade deadline.
Yep.
There are fake accounts that crop up, and they try to mimic the Elliot Friedman's, Bob McKenzie's, Pierre LeBrun's, Chris Johnson's of the world. They try to make the account look the same, and then they tweet out a trade rumor, and then they see how many people they can get. And they've duped lots of people in the past, people who want to engage in this. Some of our listeners, as I mentioned, a number of people in the Vancouver media were duped by a Ryan Kesler tweet that came out. Do you remember when they said he was going to Pittsburgh?
Yep.
Yeah, there were Vancouver media members who got fooled by that as well at the time. Ryan Kesler thought he was going to Pittsburgh in no small part because of Eddie Lack, who was also duped at the time. Have a listen to the Canucks goaltender telling that story yesterday.
I was on my phone, on Twitter, just like scrolling for the updates and everything. And I saw a tweet, which I thought was from Bob McKenzie. But when I checked later, it said like Bob McKenzie or something, right? And it was like, Ryan Kesler got traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? And I was like, Kes, you've been traded. And I'm like running in there like, Kes, it's been great playing with you, bud. Like, good luck in Pittsburgh. And like, then he ended up not getting traded. It was a fake account, right? And like, he hated me. I think he shot me in the head like 10 times that practice or something. Like,
apparently he got a talking to by John Tortorella at the time as well.
Massive. Pretty funny stuff. Ended up being a broken finger as a result of it because of a shot that Kesler took in warm-up, and he was given lack of heart. I don't think he meant to intentionally break his finger, but Eddie Lack said that's what came out of it.
We know how angry Kesler was about the fact that he was not traded to Pittsburgh, Scott. So, no, I don't think he actually did this. This is a funny text coming in. Jim from Vancouver, I was going to call Ben, but, quote, I ran out of time.
I don't know what that's a reference to. No idea. No idea. You remember who Ryan Kesler was dealt for?
Yes, Nick Bonino.
Bonino! Yeah, he scored today. I thought I'd bring that up. There's one game underway currently in the National Hockey League. Yeah, Minnesota is up 3-1 after two on the Arizona Coyotes. Nick Bonino with a power play goal and an assist in that game. Matt Zuccarello, one of the goals, Zach Parise, the other, Jacob Chychrun. His great season continues on the back end for the Arizona Coyotes. He's up to 13 goals now. He had a power play marker of his own in that game.
Good old COVID, Scott. I had no idea there was actually hockey going on right now. So, good old COVID. You never know, it's going to get thrown at you. I remember the Oilers played the Sens at 2 o'clock, what, last week or something like that. I'm like, huh, okay, afternoon hockey. Here we go. Interesting. I don't have anything more to add to that. It's just interesting.
Keep those texts coming in. We do appreciate them. 650, 650. We're waiting to find out the status. We think it's going to go ahead tonight. You talk about COVID. We know how it's affected everything here in Vancouver for the past 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The Avalanche did not skate this morning. A player put in COVID protocol. The game against the Blues tonight, it's expected to go ahead. We did see the Colorado Avalanche go through something similar last Friday. They ended up playing that game against the Anaheim Ducks. Right now, that's what we're expecting to happen tonight in St. Louis, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, you have to think, Scott, though, the league and maybe some teams have learned a little bit from what has happened with the Vancouver Canucks. Of course, Adam Gaudette being pulled from morning skate the day of a game day. And, you know, maybe they've just learned that if you don't have a test back right away, inconclusive, we're not putting anybody on the ice. Ben Kuzma with Post Media is tweeting out, Scott, that he's been told that Schmidt, Vertanen, Eriksson, and Hoglander won't be out of protocol before Friday's game. That's not a surprise to me, especially with Schmidt, Vertanen, and Hoglander, Scott, because I believe those were three of the players to go in later in the positive testing days of the Vancouver Canucks. Eriksson did not test positive, Ben says, but was a close contact of those who did test positive, so he is in his quarantine period is longer than the others. So, he won't have possibly Schmidt, Vertanen, Eriksson, Hoglander. Again, they will not be out of protocol, apparently, according to Ben Kuzma, his reporting before Friday. Scotty, I guess there is some good news on this in the fact that the terms that there were not either of the two goaltenders on this list. Again, some players are probably going to come off today, more tomorrow. Again, this just kind of shows, though, the mishmash of a lineup we're going to see against the Edmonton Oilers. And then, like, people have to remember, it's not just the Oilers on Friday. It's a back-to-back against the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday and an early puck drop.
Yeah, it's a 4 o'clock game on Saturday as well against the Toronto Maple Leafs, as you allude to. 3-4 out of the gate as the Canucks try to get enough healthy bodies back and into the lineup. I don't know what the lineup looks like on Friday. I'm sure you don't as well. And I don't know how different it's going to be from the one on Saturday. It all depends on availability at this point.
You know, I don't know what it looks like, Scott. You don't know what it looks like. And I have a feeling that the Canucks coaching staff does not have any idea what it's going to look like. I'm guessing they have some insight about who's going to come off. But again, these guys that come off today, they're going to skate for the first time, see how their bodies are. Tomorrow, they're going to have their first practice. There may be some guys, Scott, that are off the COVID list that are going, wait a second, there's no way I can play a hockey game tomorrow. So it is going to be probably a mishmash of a lineup for against Edmonton. And I mean, if you're looking to play the kids, here's your opportunity, I guess.
There's a lot of things we can't do right now, but one of the things you can do, and you can on a beautiful day like today, just make sure to maintain some social distancing You can golf. Hey, golfers, you can get great Vancouver golf for less. Go to discountgolfcard.ca for all the details. Order your Vancouver discount golf card today. It's Rintoul and Sermon. We are back tomorrow. We'll have everybody along for the ride as well. We had a Blue Jays game going on in one market today. You and I were doing the show in this one. We'll see what becomes of the Vancouver Canucks. Who's back? How many are back? Whether or not they can go ahead with practice tomorrow. Bick and the boss are coming up next. Big ups to Bick. Well, we can give Bick big ups as well. Big ups to Greg Ballack. Back, not Bick.
Well done, Bick. Well done.
At Mission Control. Well, at least Bick's seen Top Gun, Greg. I'll say that. So go do your homework tonight, and maybe we'll get you some more big ups tomorrow. Jamie Dodd, excellent job producing this program. Karen, thanks to you as well.
Wonderful show as always, Scott. Just an update to our listeners. If you want to go look, watch over on Sportsnet. Now our show is over. Top of the ninth. Blue Jays and Yankees tied at 4-4.
Very good. Jays were up, then they were down. They got one back in the sixth, and they will decide this thing either in the ninth or beyond with the runner placed on second base. Have yourselves a great day. Enjoy that sunshine out there. We will all talk tomorrow. Bick and the Boss are up next on Sportsnet 650.